27.
We received support from Rapids Brewing Company, a place for gathering and community featuring live music multiple times a week, farm fresh food, and rotating beers from their own brew house. More information about their events, music, and menu available at rapidsbrewingco.com. And support for KAXE comes from Itasca County Habitat for Humanity, hosting their annual fundraiser, Building for Tomorrow, on Tuesday, November 18th. That's a week from today, from 4:30 to 6:30 at the Cohasset Community Center. The event includes appetizers, silent auction items, and more. Full details can be found at itascahabitat.org.
Coming up will be the Up North Report. The KEXE news team has put together a list of food-related resources across northern Minnesota. It's at kexe.org. You'll find hours of operation, locations of food shelves, along with information on soup kitchens and community meals. If you have something to add, email news@kexe.org.
For KAXE News, I'm Megan Buffington with a special edition of the Up North Report. 3 years ago, thousands gathered in Chisholm to see the wall that heals. The United Way of Northeastern Minnesota's United for Veterans Committee brought the traveling replica of the Vietnam Veterans Memorial to the area.
I think it was not only informative, it was very therapeutic.
Steve Potts has taught history for over 40 years. He's currently an instructor at Minnesota North College Hibbing and is on the committee. When the wall visited, many veterans shared their stories for the first time. That sparked the creation of Operation Service Story. The Oral History Project is a partnership between United Way and the St. Louis County Historical Society. The aim is to gather stories of veterans and service members from the Iron Range and Kuchiching and Lake of the Woods counties. When the effort first launched last year, it was called Operation Soldier Story. Soldier was changed to service to include all facets of service, including nurses and non-combat veterans. Potts has an extensive background in oral history, including interviewing Holocaust survivors. He's talked with three veterans for this project.
I wish we had more vets who are willing to be interviewed, but, you know, it's difficult for a lot of people to talk about what went on there.
His father served in World War II, and he could never get him to talk much about his service. Chad Boos had a similar experience with his grandfather.
I never knew about his experiences, where he went, or I didn't know very much, and now he's passed.
Boos is the United Way of Northeastern Minnesota's board chair. He served in the Air Force from 1999 to 2003 and was deployed with the 101st Airborne Division for the invasion of Iraq.
I want my kids to be able to learn about my story. It was one day when I'm not here to tell them or their kids, my grandkids, or et cetera, you know.
Boos talked for 2 hours with one of the trained interviewers, who was also a veteran.
At the end of that 2 hours, it was I had a new friend, a new brother in arms.
He says the conversation was a 50,000 foot view, but covered his whole experience in the service.
We talked about some of my motivation for going into the service. We talked a little bit about basic training, going through advanced training, my first duty assignment, and then different exercises.
They discussed his time wrestling with the All Air Force team before 9/11 and parts of his deployment.
Getting into some details and some stuff we kept at a pretty high level.
Potts says veterans who participate in Operation Service Story get to decide the parameters, including what they talk about, how long they talk, and even who they talk to.
They can make it only available to family. They can make it so it's not available until they've passed away. They can donate it. They can record it and keep a copy for themselves. We do a full transcript, written transcript, type transcript of each of the interviews. You know, we're very accommodating, and that's kind of the best thing to do with oral history interviews. But it's a chance for people to record things before those memories are lost.
Boos's message to veterans who might be hesitant to share their story is that if you don't, it ends with you.
No one else can learn from it, can empathize from it, can hear about it. People in the military and veterans especially, you don't want to speak up, you don't want to stand out, you want to remain humble, but our men and women in the armed forces do some absolutely incredible things and have incredible experiences, and it's worth sharing with other people. Let them know your story, I guess, is my pitch.
Service members from the Iron Range and Kuchiching and Lake of the Woods counties can visit unitednemn.org to sign up for Operation Service Story. There you can also find additional services from United Way, including a veterans resource guide and information on the annual veterans retreat. That's it for this special edition of the Up North Report. From the KAXE News Desk, I'm Megan Buffington, telling the stories of northern Minnesota through local news.
The Up North Report is sponsored by Woodland Bank, with locations in Grand Rapids, Cohasset, Hill City, and Deer River, dedicated to serving the financial needs of the community and their customers. More info at woodland.bank.
It is 7:06 and you are tuned in to People-Powered KAXE, and that includes news that's local, like the Up North Report, and national news coverage as well. We're learning more from Domenico Montanaro on shutdown politics. I'm Heidi Holton with John Latimer. Thanks for being with us today.
Support for this program comes from Sanford Health, with primary care locations in Bemidji and across the upper Midwest. Sanford Health is committed to providing care close to home. Learn more at sanfordhealth.org.
Got John's phenology report coming up at 7:20. We'd love to hear from you this morning. Did you see any wildlife? Did you get a deer this weekend?
Yeah.
Did you do some phenology from the deer stand?
Yeah, that's always the fun part for me. And a good friend of mine, Dylan, got his deer, a nice 8-point buck, sent a picture along early Saturday morning. Always nice. It was always my dream was to shoot a deer early Saturday morning so I could get back to duck hunting.
Let us know. You can text us 218-326-1234. Coming up in this half hour, it's John's full phenology report.
On this Veterans Day, it's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Steve Inskeep.
And I'm Leila Faldin. Here's where the longest federal government shutdown stands. The Senate voted last night to end it. The House has yet to vote.
Republicans got roughly what they demanded, reopening the government without extending subsidies for health insurance. Just enough Senate Democrats agreed to do without extending those subsidies, although the Senate at least will vote on them soon. So what does that mean for the party that was trying to find some way to assert itself?
Coming up, we'll hear from Representative Seth Moulton of Massachusetts. We begin with the big picture.
NPR's senior political editor and correspondent Domenico Montanaro has been following that. Domenico, good morning.
Hey, great to be with you.
What's a way to think about this result?
Well, you know, Democrats are certainly right now getting a lot of backlash from the left. And, you know, for some understandable reasons, I mean, they feel like they continue to get rolled, that the party promises one thing and then in the end caves or doesn't quite keep up the fight. So you understand a lot of the irritability from the left about this toward Democrats. But it might not be as bad for Democrats in the long run here into the 2026 midterm elections. I mean, they have the opportunity, Democrats, to look like the adults in the room who care, you know, if people go hungry. And they also raise the issue of health care subsidies, which many weren't talking about before this shutdown fight. And if they get this promised vote in December on health care subsidies, then it's certainly going to draw a dividing line, and Republicans are really going to own that issue. And there were divides between, you know, people in the party before these off-year elections. Democrats still swept across the country. And the reason why was because of that issue of affordability. That's still likely to be the top issue next year, too.
Oh, this is interesting. So if Democrats did well in last week's elections and at least raised their issue, even if they didn't win the issue in this shutdown fight, is there any particular danger for the Democrats who voted to reopen the government?
You know, I think we're going to see potentially more primaries in the next year. I think the left has certainly gotten more activist and more engaged in this fight. But remember, most Democratic members of Congress were against this move. Yeah. You know, I think they're going to try to sell that to their constituents. I think what we're seeing is also indicative of a changing Democratic Party, one that's moved from really a pragmatism to a pugilism in the age of Trump, really wanting fighters. It was a party that was far more willing to compromise than it is now, polling showing that. There was an NBC poll, for example, in 2017 have found that 6 in 10 Democrats are more likely favoring compromising with Trump. During his second term here, that's flipped. 2/3 of Democrats earlier this year in that same poll said they thought members of the party should stand on principle instead. That was back in March, right around the time when there was almost a shutdown before Democratic leader Chuck Schumer pulled the plug and worked with Republicans to keep it open.
Is Senator Schumer in any trouble?
I think he's in a really tough position, frankly. I mean, he held the line for 40 days saying don't reopen the government unless Republicans negotiate on these healthcare subsidies, but senators defied his public comments. So either he was unable to keep everyone on the same page, or he tacitly allowed folks to vote this way. And there's some question about that because none of the people who came out in favor of this deal are up for re-election next year. Two of them are retiring. It was really a group that could weather the political blowback on this. And look, he's 74. He's not where the party is heading right now. It would not be surprising, as I've heard other Democrats and Democratic strategists say, to see him not leading the party in 2027, regardless of the outcome of next year's midterms.
Who has the advantage heading into those midterms?
You know, I still think it's hard not to see it being Democrats. You know, affordability was the main issue of the past election. It's very likely to be again next year. And if that's the case, and the cost of living is still pinching people's pockets, then with Trump and Republicans in charge, it's still going to be an edge for Democrats. Plus, Democrats have the issues on their side. In addition to affordability, there's health care. And as we know, congressional elections and control of the House are determined in these swing districts. And winning is going to cure a lot of ills if the environment stays the way it does.
Also, people keep voting against whoever is in. So Democrats have the advantage there. Domenico, thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Domenico Montanaro. Massachusetts Representative Seth Moulton is among the House Democrats who are criticizing the Senate deal, and he's on the line. Congressman, good morning.
Good morning.
Here's an argument, listening to Domenico, that you could make in favor of reopening the government now. You made your point. You raised your issue. You don't have the power to prevail on the issue right now, but you made it clear who's blocking you, and now you move on. What's wrong with that thinking?
Why would you give up now? I mean, this is actually when the Republicans seem to be starting to give in. You have Marjorie Taylor Greene, one of the most extreme Republicans in history, saying that she can't afford health care for her own family. And so the Democrats are right, and Republicans should give in. Just after the Democratic sweep in last Tuesday's election, you had Trump come out and say, the shutdown is a real problem. You need to come bring this to an end. So why you would give up now and put Americans in a position where they're not going to be able to afford health care in a few months, I just don't know. We're the only folks standing between Donald Trump and the American people.
There was, of course, an opposite position expressed by John Fetterman of Pennsylvania. He's one of the Democrats who voted to reopen the government. He spoke with our colleague Scott Detrow on All Things Considered yesterday. Let's listen to that.
I absolutely support extending those tax credits. But for me, the kinds of chaos and holding our government hostage is unacceptable. And you can have priorities, but it's wrong to go shutting our government down.
Do you think that another week or another month would have made a difference?
I think it would have. I think the administration was feeling the pressure, especially going into the Thanksgiving holiday. They didn't want chaos over Thanksgiving. They didn't want people unable to get home for Thanksgiving. This was just the wrong time to give in. You don't capitulate at the moment where you think that the other side is actually coming around. With all due respect to Senator Fetterman, I mean, he sounds like he's using Trump's talking points here. And that's what we don't need. We don't need people who are giving in to Donald Trump. We need people who are fighting him on behalf of the American people.
Well, that raises is another interesting question, because as some people will know, Congressman, you're running for U.S. Senate from Massachusetts. You're in the Democratic primary. If you were to win, would you be voting for the Senate Democratic leader Chuck Schumer to remain the Democratic leader?
No, I will not. I think there's a leadership vacuum in the Democratic Party right now, and it's time for a new generation of Democrats to step up. And that's the message I'm running on in Massachusetts, and it's the message that we need to hear across the country. The two brightest spots for Democrats in the past week were Abigail Spanberger in Virginia and Mikey Sherrill in New Jersey, representing a new generation of leadership and now taking over entire states. That's what Democrats are excited about right now. We're frustrated, frankly, with the status quo, with the same old playbook that Schumer and others are using that's led us to a second term of Donald Trump where he's hurting a lot of people.
I'm intrigued by your analysis of last week's elections because you mentioned the Democrats who won the governor's races in Virginia and New Jersey who are considered a bit more pragmatic. You did not mention Sohran Mamdani, the Democratic Socialist on the Democratic ticket who won the mayoralty of New York. Where does he fit into your analysis of the direction of the party?
He's also young. He also represents a new generation of leaders. I mean, that's the point. The people who are winning right now are a new generation who is stepping up to make a difference for this country. And that's what we need right now. The status quo has not worked. And people right now who are just protecting the establishment, they're not getting it done for the Democratic Party.
Are you getting close, and I don't mean in terms of policies, but in terms of attitude, getting close to the place that House Republicans have been for a number of years, that they would almost rather burn things down than sustain things, that they don't feel there's really very much value in the system as it stands?
Listen, the point is that Donald Trump is trying to tear apart this country. He's trying to burn things down. So this is not a time to give in to him. This is the time to stand up to Donald Trump. And we have very few moments where we can actually do this. But the two biggest moments in the last year, the shutdown in March and the shutdown right here, in both cases, Senator Schumer has given in.
Any chance you might still get what you want here, by which I mean this is past the Senate, it goes to the House, Democrats seem united against it or nearly united against it, and maybe Republicans will not muster the votes to pass it?
Well, we don't know. It'll be a close vote in the House. The Democratic House caucus is quite united against this deal. And there are a lot of Democrats across the country who do not agree with these Senate Republicans who gave in and do not understand why Senator Schumer, who's supposed to lead Senate Democrats, allowed them to do that.
Democratic Congressman Seth Moulton of Massachusetts, it's a pleasure talking with you. Thank you so much.
Always good to talk to you, Steve.
And we'll note that, as always, we invite multiple Republicans as well as Democrats in the program to discuss the shutdown. We'll keep reaching out to them.
The Americas was the only region in the world that eliminated endemic measles until Monday. Canada has now had local transmission of the highly infectious virus for 12 straight months. Experts worry the U.S. could soon follow. NPR's Gabriela Emanuel reports.
In the past year, the United States' neighbor to the north has seen more than 5,000 measles cases. And it's not just Canada. In the Americas overall, there's been a 30-fold increase in cases compared to last year, with the vast majority happening in Canada, Mexico, and the U.S.
It's incredibly disappointing and sad because measles is an entirely preventable disease.
Nina Schwalbe is with Georgetown University's Center for Global Health Policy and Politics. Measles can be life-threatening, but it can be avoided with two doses of a vaccine. The target is 95% of people immunized, but rates have dropped to 79% in the Americas.
It speaks to a lack of confidence in vaccines, which is hitting everywhere in the world.
She says this is driven by misinformation about vaccines, including from high-level politicians like President Trump and Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. The U.S. has seen big measles outbreaks since January of this year.
The U.S. is not far behind Canada. It's likely, certainly in the first quarter of next year, we'll lose our status.
But Daniel Salas of the Pan American Health Organization says he's optimistic the region can regain its measles-free status. A handful of years ago, he says Venezuela and Brazil lost their status, but were able to get it back later.
In the case of Venezuela, for example, they had, like, for almost 3 years, a very, very aggressive, active surge of cases throughout all the country.
And Brazil, he says, zeroed in on communities with low vaccination rates and came up with targeted strategies.
Identifying influencers, positive influencers that can help, for example, in a moment that there is a fake news or something that might raise panic in the population.
Their success, he says, proves these strategies can be enough to stop measles in its tracks. Gabriela Emanuel, NPR News.
This is NPR News.
It is 7:19 coming up. John Latimer and our Phenology Report, Nature for You. We'll continue on with our student reports as well before 8 o'clock. Then Tornado Bob joins us for the big weather picture. And Pam Perry will be talking cranes and frogs. That's coming up before 9 o'clock. We got, John, a couple of texts. Are you ready?
Sure.
Noah from Britt texted in to us, and he said, good morning. Noah here reporting from our homestead near Britt. Yesterday morning, I investigated what turned out to be fresh bear tracks along our road. Looks like this young one hasn't gotten the memo to nap. Also, had the privilege of killing what I hope is the last mosquito of the season yesterday afternoon.
Okay. That's really good because I have a note here from today's date, 11/11/2017, of a mosquito that I killed. So I'm going to put Noah in here.
And then Susan from Cotton texted in to 218-326-1234 saying our trail cam has had an interesting few weeks. On October 22nd, it caught up to 5 wolves passing through.
Ooh.
On November 5th, a big black bear stared at the poor camera for a bit. The camera has been hit by a bear before. And Sunday night, one of our pair of gray foxes caught a big hare. Wow, that's exciting.
Wow, no kidding. And I've got a note from about gray foxes from Steve Young up in... I can never think of it. It's the town that you have to be careful about how you pronounce it. Because one way it's the name of a town and the other way it's the name of something.
I think I know. He runs the Christmas Bird Counts?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, he's active with the trout.
Gotcha.
People, but I don't know why. Steve, I'm sorry. I don't know why I can't remember the name of the town. It's up there near Pennington. No, it's north of Pennington, north of Bemidji.
Not Badette.
No, it's a small town. Okay. Like, yeah.
We also just got...
Nebish.
Oh, there. Okay.
Nebish.
Okay.
Nebish.
There we go. Julie from Cook just texted in as well, John, saying that you had asked about shrikes last week.
Yeah.
She said, we did have one visit our feeder area on November 6th. I just happened to look out at the right time as it didn't stay long. It was perched on a low branch when I first saw it and then dropped down to the ground for a short while before flying off. It was most definitely a northern shrike. I had a good look at the narrow black mask. It was more gray than others I've seen in the past, suggesting it might be a first winter bird. I see at least a couple each winter over this way. I have a video I want to share of a shrike that killed a vole right outside our window years back, but I'm having trouble sending it. If I solve the problem, I'll share it. It was a very interesting experience to get to watch the event.
Yeah. I had a video of a shrike attacking a downy woodpecker. And not sure who sent it to me, but yeah, they're moving into the area along with a whole host of other birds that are coming down to balmy northern Minnesota to spend the winter. And we'll talk a little bit about that coming up on the Phenology Report. Right now, it's time to tell you that programming on KEXE is supported in part by the Minnesota Humanities Center, distributing more than $6 million in cultural heritage grants. Funding is available to individuals and organizations that will create, celebrate, and teach Minnesota's diverse arts, culture, and heritage, including Indigenous organizations, historically underrepresented communities, and recent immigrants and veterans. Details at mnhum.org/grants.
Mostly cloudy skies today, highs 39 to 45, breezy southwest winds 10 to 20 miles an hour.
It's time for the Phenology Show. Phenology is the rhythmic biological nature of events as they relate to climate. which is a long way of saying that, you know, every season brings its own events, and we are approaching winter. We are not at winter yet, but we are definitely moving toward winter. And of course, there are a lot of things that happen in the winter in northern Minnesota. Some people would say nothing happens, but others of us, those of us who have, I don't know, more of an interest, maybe more of a discerning eye, we have many, many, many events that we note throughout the winter, changes that are occurring that we may not always pay attention to. One of the things that's happening this time of year right now is the snowshoe hare and cottontail rabbits are going to become differentiated. The snowshoe hare is going to change its color from gray to white, and the rabbit will remain gray. So if you have a gray rabbit in your yard, it is that, a rabbit. If you have a white rabbit in your yard, it is a hare. And of course, if you've been a longtime listener, you've heard me describe the difference. There are quite a few differences. For instance, the hare, besides turning white, the hare gives birth to precocial offspring. She merely clears a spot on the ground and has her babies, and her babies within hours are up and moving around and following her about. The cottontail rabbit, on the other hand, digs a shallow hole, lines it with some of her fur and some grasses, and she has her babies in that hole, and those babies are blind and naked and need her constant care in order to survive. So they are altricial. So that right away sort of defines the differences between the two. They are not at all the same animals, even though when you look at them, they look much the same. The snowshoe hare is much more adapted to the cold weather and handles itself in a different way than the cottontail rabbit. Among the observations that I have for this date, this is Veterans Day, this is the 11th of November. In a year ago, I was still seeing robins. I have seen robins this past week here, and I expect to see one or two more before I see my last robin of the year. Typically, that's sometime in mid-November to sometimes as early as, or as late as early December. On this date, on the 11th of November in 2018, McKinney Lake was frozen over. Crooked Lake froze over on the 11th in 2008, and in 1989, Prairie Lake was frozen over on November 11th in 1997 and in 1986. Noah just called with a note from Britt saying that he had killed a mosquito yesterday. I have a note from the 11th today in 2017 when I killed a mosquito. Pine grosbeaks and evening grosbeaks were both seen for the first time in 2011. In 2012 and 2010. Evening grosbeaks in 2008 in Hill City. That was Diana Magner's class. They had evening grosbeaks down there. I have reports from both in the area of evening grosbeaks and from right up on the border in Bedette. Jeff Burcham and Andy Pearson reported seeing evening grosbeaks and pine grosbeaks this past week. So there are some moving into the areas. Pine siskins were seen on this date in 2012. Dallas Hudson reported a morning cloak butterfly on the 11th of November in 2009, which is really late. I haven't seen a morning cloak that late in a long, long time. Autumn willows were quite prominent in 2004 on this date. First great gray owl seen on 2000 on the 11th and in 2004. And I still had an active chipmunk at my house in 1985 on the 11th. A couple of notes from my own notes in this past week. We had snow on Friday night, it was Friday night, Saturday, and I measured it at about half an inch, and it melted out to about 0.02 inch of moisture, but there was snow cover on the ground, pretty much universal at my house, I think the snow staying on the ground, snow falling and remaining, the average date for that is the 11th of November. And that date is, by the way, getting pushed back. That is, Bob Consemius and I have sort of compared notes, and in the recent years, that is early December now before we really get first accumulations of snow that then remain on the ground. First quarter inch accumulation of snow is averages October 5th. This year, not until November 7th or 8th. Last dandelions, I saw some this past Thursday, the 16th and 24, the 18th and 13, and on, the 17th in 08, and in 1999, I still had, dandelions in flower on, the 20th of November. Had a good look at some asparagus this past week. It is bright yellow and trending towards orange. Typically, that's a mid-October kind of an event. It begins to turn yellow. It's noticeably yellow in October. October 15th or 12th is about my average date for that to happen. And that continues. And they'll become ever more orange, but this is definitely the time of year to get out and mark them, because while they're not edible, as I have to keep explaining to my fifth grade students, that's asparagus, and no, you can't eat it. You have to mark it and come back in the spring and get the new shoots that are coming up. So that's one of the things you have to do. Noah also reported a black bear at his house. I had a black bear at my house the other night on Saturday night. Came in. I keep a 20-gallon pail of white millet that I throw out for the juncos and the sparrows, the fox sparrows and the tree sparrows, and earlier on the white-throated sparrows. They all like the millet really well. Anyway, he knocked the lid off of that, and that woke up my wife, and she went out and scared it off. Small black bear, probably a second year, and just kind of, you know, wandering around looking for a meal before it retires. We had a long conversation with Andy Try a few weeks ago, and talked about black bears and when they go to bed, and there are plenty that are still awake this late in the year. So still probably wise to keep your bird seed in under cover, and also bring your suet in at night so that the black bear doesn't come and help himself. Northern harriers are still working the fields by my house. Those are those hawks. They have a big white patch on their rump, and they're pretty easy to see. The males are silver, and the females are brown. I haven't seen a female in a few weeks, but my neighbor Marvin tells me that his experience, because he lives right on the edge of the field, he sees them all the time. He says they'll stay until it snows, and then they'll disappear, and then they'll go far south as they have to have open ground. And then as the snow begins to retreat, they will move back along the same kind of lines. So they'll be, we will see them for a while and then they'll disappear and they'll be back in the spring just as the snow begins to melt off the fields. I saw a big flock of snow buntings this past week. I know I had reported seeing snow buntings last week. Big flocks this week and a big flock on Blue Heron Drive this week. So they're definitely coming back. I bumped up a couple of grouse yesterday, right? They were on a swamp crossing. They were down in the tag alders and the speckled alders. And they were sitting on the ground and walked right up to them. I was probably 15 feet away when they jumped up and started flying. They were probably distressed to be moved from a spot where maybe they were finding food and shelter. And they will be back, I'm certain. Along with the snow that came this past week, I had ice. I have a margin of ice around Crooked Lake, the lake that I live on. And I also saw a couple of ponds that were frozen over. And I was told by my neighbor Marvin that Lily Lake at the airport had frozen over. So some of the smaller, shallower lakes may have a carpet of ice on them. I went to Crooked Lake yesterday. I took a picture of my dog walking on the ice, but I was not able to get out on the ice myself. Dog weighs about a little less than half of what I weigh. The dog is 80 pounds, and I'm more than twice that. Apparently there wasn't enough ice for a fat boy like me. The cottonwoods are sort of getting down to it now. They're dropping their leaves. The white poplar, which is, the leaf on it is going to look like a maple leaf. They are dropping their leaves. The buckthorn are dropping their leaves. We're getting to the end. Those trees, Lombardy poplar is another one. The Lombardy poplar is the one that kind of looks like a cigar. It's sort of very compact and quite tall. Not very branchy. All of those trees are introduced into the area, and all of them have that that odd habit of holding on to their leaves late into the year. Weeping willow is another one that does that. So many, many things that are happening. As I mentioned, I haven't seen any tree sparrows or no tree sparrows, no fox sparrows, and the juncos are declining in number. So we're seeing fewer and fewer of those as we move forward. We are coming into the season where we will be looking for rough-legged hawks to come down from up north, owls, the great grays, the northern hawk, the boreal owl. Many of those owls will be coming to northern Minnesota for a snowy owl, if you're lucky. Many of them will be moving down into northern Minnesota for a winter of rest and respite. And hopefully one or all of us will get a chance to see some of those over the next couple of months. And we'll be watching for them as they come. That's the Phenology Show for today. As always, if you have observations you'd like to share, we would love to hear from you, so get in touch with us.
You'll be able to catch Phenology on our website and portions of it on this week's Season Watch Pod. Those come out on Thursday mornings that have a lot of great information. Susan from Cotton was able to send us a photo from her of a bear coming up to the trail cam.
Oh.
Tongue hanging out, white, looked like headlights instead of eyes.
Oh, you know? Night shot.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thanks so much to everybody for texting in and for giving us your phenology notes. We love hearing about the nature you're seeing. It connects us all. You can text 218-326-1234. I'm excited about the owls. I forgot.
Yeah, this is a time of year to start watching for them. There'll be some new owls in the neighborhood. Hopefully I'll see a snowy owl this year. It's only been, let's see, now it's going to be 61 years that it'll be since I saw my last one.
Do they see snowy owls? I guess it just depends, but at Sac Sim?
Oh, yes, occasionally. It's okay. Not, the snowy owls like open areas.
Okay.
You want to see a snowy owl hang out around an airport?
Oh,
they like, they live in an area without trees for the most of their lives. And so when they come down here, they will, you know, hang out in trees, but normally they're going to be looking for these big open areas where there's lots of grass and not a lot of trees. That's just what they're used to.
Yeah, we've got some connections in the Sac Sim area of people who drive through there every day and know where to look.
So yeah, yeah, yeah.
We'll have to connect with them.
We will be anxious to hear, and perhaps, as I said, this will be the year where I break the curse and actually get a chance to see a snowy owl again. It's been a while.
We just heard from Lily from Beauvais. She said, we have been seeing birds with white wings underneath but brown on top. We cannot identify them. Any idea?
Sounds like snow buntings.
Oh, okay.
If the overall appearance of the bird is white, I mean, there's a little brown on top, and if they're in flocks, it sounds like snow buntings. Now, I've seen a single snow bunting, and I've seen two or three, but usually I see 25 to 50. They travel in big flocks, and the overall appearance when they're flying is white. You're going to see a lot of white, white on the back, white on the tail, white on the wings. If you get close enough to look at them, you'll see that there's a bit of brown on them. In the summertime, in their breeding plumage, they are nearly all white, the males. And so they're a little bit different when you see them up north. But down here where we see them in the wintertime, they come through and they're sort of vagabonds. They don't hang out. They don't hang out in an area and stay. They're a lot like the Bohemian waxwings and the cedar waxwings in that they're constantly on the move looking for food. And they'll come into an area, you'll see them for a little while, and then they're gone. So.
Okay, so sounding like not snow buntings, because Lily's saying they're mostly brown on top, only white on the very bottom of the wings, the underside.
Hmm. Mostly brown with white under the wing.
So Pam Perry's probably listening, and maybe she's going to
have some ideas. Yeah, she may have some ideas. Sounds sparrow-like to me, but I can't think of, well, I suppose it could be... It could be white-throated. It could be fox, or, well, the fox is a big sparrow and kind of reddish on the back. Could be the American tree sparrow. If they're sparrow-sized, you know, this would be just some conjecture. I'm not sure.
Okay.
Doesn't sound like juncos. Juncos are gray on the back and white on the belly, but I don't know what the underside of a junco's wings look like, if they're dark or light.
And Deb, near Bruno, I don't know where Bruno is. I've been hearing barred owls calling in the early morning, an ascending cry followed by a couple hoo-hoos.
Yeah, they're definitely talking a little bit, and they will get more vocal as we get further into winter. We receive support from the Northland Foundation, working within Northeast Minnesota, offering grants, small business supports, and programs to help people and communities working toward a future where everyone feels they belong and can thrive. More at northlandfdn.org.
Coming up, we'll have best wishes and more nature reports from students. Mostly cloudy skies today, highs 39 to 45 around the region with breezy southwest winds 10 to 20. Cloudy tonight, becoming mostly clear. There is a chance of rain or flurries in northeastern Minnesota. Lows in the upper 20s and breezy northwest winds tonight, 10 to 25.
We receive support from Dragonfly Coffee, located in Central Square Mall in Grand Rapids, featuring a scratch bakery and offering espresso, bubble tea, and more, empowering inclusion and community through employment. Special orders available and more at drinkdragonfly.com. It's time for best wishes. And this is the chance for you to have your birthday or anniversary celebrated, or maybe the anniversary or birthday of someone you like. We do our best to wish our friends and neighbors happy birthday and happy anniversary. For today, November 11th, Dave and Allison Edgerton are celebrating their 58th anniversary in Bacchus. Congratulations, 58 years. Wow.
It's all the dancing they do.
Oh, okay. Well, my neighbor Marvin would hardly endorse that. He's a dancer, and you can catch him just about every Friday night.
Oh, yeah?
Dancing somewhere, you bet. Huh. Yeah. Bill Testman is having his 83rd birthday today. Happy birthday, Bill. Bill lives in Marcel. Zenas Bear is having a birthday today in Moorhead. And Charlie Blue, a birthday in Ramsey. And Michelle Makala is having a birthday today in Eveleth. Happy birthday and anniversary to all of you. And we've got some music.
That's right. This is our album of the week. It's the brand new album from Mavis Staples. It's Sad and Beautiful World is the title. And if you check out the write-up on our website, it's about how Malachi and Kari were able to see Mavis Staples at the Winnipeg Folk Festival last summer. And she had just turned 86. And for them, it was the highlight of the festival. And it was a performance that stuck with them. She has, they describe it as the same fire, tenderness, and embodiment of resistance we experienced that day in this cleverly selected set of songs from producer Brad Cook. Prepare to bawl your eyes out to the title track, Sparkle Horse cover.
If you ever hear that thunder, put your eye to the sky, boy, and wonder. Maybe there's a kingdom above the weather. Oh, and whether you're gonna get on in is up to you. Crying in a distance like some siren. Maybe there's a singer with no ring around his little finger. Oh, love. And if I lose my voice, if I have no choice but to go quiet, won't you sing for me a melody into the night there? If I die too young and the wolf they come fee fi fo fum, if I die too young and the locusts come, then run, run, run free. You may think about what you do, but you don't got. Say a prayer, think of mother, I am a rock. Oh yeah. If you ever hear that sound now, if the door gets kicked in, here they come now. Think of others, be their cover, I am what they're not. Pray for Paris, they cannot scare us or stop the music. No, you've got a sweet voice, child, why don't you use it? And if I die too young, if the gunmen come, so release me, every piece of me up above.
Can't stand the coppers up in their choppers.
This is brand new from our album of the week by Mavis Staples, the song called Beautiful Strangers. It's a beautiful song.
What a voice. Wow.
And yeah. You can hear more of it through our website or throughout our programming this week, kaxc.org. I'm sure much more than just this week. What a great new album from her.
We receive support from Minnesota Power, an elite company powering the region's homes, businesses, and industry since 1923. Learn more about its vision of a carbon-free future at mnpower.com/energyforward.
And thanks to North and Bloom in downtown Grand Rapids, with floral arrangements for all occasions and holidays throughout the year, also offering wedding consultations, flower subscriptions, and gift sets. More info, northinbloom.com.
Programming is supported by Grand Dental Center, where Doctors Lisa Johnson, Leanna McBride, and their staff provide full-service family dental care for patients of all ages in Grand Rapids and surrounding communities. More information at granddentalcenter.com.
Couple of things coming in via text. Deb near Bruno, she's telling us, I didn't know where that was, Northern Pine County is where that Bruno is. And then our friend Jen Kellen is texting in. She said, good morning, Heidi and John. Over the last couple weeks, we've had owls flying low around our house, garden, and yard. Took us a few days to ID them, but now we're fairly certain they are short-eared owls. We suspect they are enjoying the extraordinarily large population of voles that have been in our pasture this fall.
There are a lot of little critters out there, and I'm sure that a short-eared owl would find them way, way tasty. So. Good on you. Thanks, Jen, for that note. Thanks for everybody who sends along, makes this community radio. You know, that's the beauty of this whole situation, is we get to hear from you as well. And that's what makes it a lot of fun. We're about to re-embark on our student phenology, but first let me tell you that we receive support from Buckhorn on Caribou Lake, featuring 5 handcrafted log cabins in the Chippewa National Forest just north of Grand Rapids, accommodating families and large groups or weekend getaways for couples. Rates and information at buckhornoncaribou.com. It's time for a continuation of our Phenology Talkbacks. Our Phenology Talkbacks are funded in part by the Minnesota Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund. Phenology Talkbacks are produced by Charlie Mitchell. Our next report comes from Lee Jackson and Darcy Rolfe's classes at North Shore Community School near Duluth. Before we start, I have to tell you that an eighth grader from a school in Duluth, whose name has escaped me, Cora is her name, and she called me and asked for an interview. She's an eighth grader now. She did reporting and phenology with the North Shore Community School for many years, and now she's at Marshall School, and now she is still continuing to do phenology. And she called, and we had a nice interview the other day. Talked for about 40 minutes about phenology, and just had a wonderful moment. Yeah, thank you, and. From Darcy and Lee Jackson, Darcy Rolfe and Lee Jackson's class at North Shore Community School near Duluth, we have this report.
Hello from North Shore Community School on the north shore of Lake Superior. My name is Violet and I'm your phenologist for this week. On Wednesday night, November 5th, Miss Urban was about to go to bed when she looked outside and saw the northern lights. They were so bright and they were easily visible even though the full moon was out. This week, we noticed lots of plants that are still green, something that's unusual for this time of year. On Monday, November 3rd, Miss Urban noticed round-lobed hepatica that was still green. On Tuesday, November 4th, Miss Rademacher's class noticed more green plants like western sweet, coltsfoot, and naked bishop's cap. Also on Tuesday, the preschoolers noticed the green fronds of spinulus wood fern and the fertile fronds of sensitive fern that will release its spores next season on Wednesday, November 5th. The preschoolers noticed green leaves of Canadian bunchberry that had turned purple. On Monday, November 3rd, Miss Urban noticed lots of migrating raptors at school, including bald eagles, rough-legged hawks, and red-tailed hawks. The wind was very strong, so the raptors were probably taking advantage of the good migration conditions. The preschoolers were exploring on Tuesday, November 4th, and found two lobster mushrooms. The mushrooms were not attached to the ground. Perhaps a little animal picked them to eat as a snack. The preschoolers also found a pill bug, which isn't even an insect. It's a crustacean, which means it's closely related to lobsters or shrimp. This concludes the phenology report. Have a great week and be observant.
Thank you, Violet. What a nice report. You guys really have a great situation there. And obviously, it sticks because Cora, who is an eighth grader at school in Duluth, is still doing phenology after having been exposed at North Shore Community School. The Northern Lights were fabulous, and I am I'm unpleasantly reminded that I was not awake and outside to enjoy them. And they got to looking at green items and things that are still green. The round-lobed hepatica, they're going to be green all winter. I don't know about the sweet coltsfoot. Usually that dies back. Naked bishop's cap is a plant of wetlands. I have not seen any in the fall. I don't generally run across it unless I'm out in a bog somewhere. But it's entirely possible that it is one of those evergreen plants. Wood ferns are definitely green. They will remain green all winter. Those will be the non-fertile. Those are the vestigial ferns. I can't think of the right word right now. Sensitive fern fronds. The fertile fronds of the sensitive fern are definitely up and noticeable, as well as those of the ostrich fern, which is quite similar. Canada bunchberry is definitely turning purple. Rough-legged hawks, red-tailed hawks doing a lot of migrating. Red-tails probably going further south down to Minneapolis. Rough-legged hawks might stop right here in northern Minnesota. And kids got a chance to find a couple of lobster mushrooms. Too late to probably eat them, but certainly one of the wonderful treats of the woods if you're lucky enough to come across it in the right time. Our next report comes from Pequot Lakes Middle School's trip to Long Lake Conservation Center near Palisade.
Hi, this is Penelope
and Mackenzie from Pequot Lakes Middle School. During our trip to Long Lake Conservation Center on November 5th and 6th, the high temperature was a sunny 50 degrees Fahrenheit and the low was 19. The supermoon was very large and bright. The Ojibwe called the November full moon the beaver moon. Our group didn't see any beavers, but Kinley, Walker, and others saw a muskrat on the lake. On Wednesday, the warm midday sun resulted in some sightings unusual for November. We saw a gardener snake sunning itself outside of the hibernaculum, an earthworm, and an autumn meadowhawk dragonfly. And there were multiple reports of wasps. With colder temperatures in the forecast, this might be the last sightings of these creatures until spring.
Other sightings included white-tailed deer, a dead blue jay, and red and gray squirrels. In the bog, we found cranberries. Along the way, there was lots and lots and lots of scat. We found deer, bear, and mouse scat. Bash said this morning's sunrise was beautiful, and a few people who stayed up late reported seeing the northern lights. We had a great time exploring nature, and we want to remind everyone to unplug, get outside,
and live connected.
Indeed, live connected. Thank you, Penelope and Mackenzie. Lots of great things in that one. The super moon was quite bright. That was on November 5th. Garter snake still out. That's amazing. Autumn meadowhawk dragonfly. My fifth graders in Cohasset reported a dragonfly this past, it would have been a week ago Wednesday. So they're still around. We found a wasp, and the children were all quite alarmed when I put it in my hand and just held it. It was thoroughly and completely dead, had frozen to death in the cold temperatures, which is what happens to wasps if they're not the queen. Those colonies all start over brand new each spring. White-tailed deer, red and gray squirrels, cranberries in the bog, lots of things. And, of course, the northern lights. So, great report.